Recently, I spotted an article about the Irish Museum of Time. It's been nominated for the prestigious British Guild of Travel Writers International Tourism Awards 2022. So I went further to see what is the Irish Museum of Time because I hadn't heard of it. It's located in or on Greyfriars Street in the heart of Waterford's Viking Triangle. Ireland's National Horological Museum is home to some of the oldest Irish-made grandfather clocks, table clocks, and watches in the world. There's also clocks and timepieces from other parts of the world as well. I'm going to come to that very shortly because when I saw that, I thought, well, I wonder what the Waterford Viking Triangle is. And then I found myself looking at a fabulous website of waterfordtreasures.com, which is basically a number of museums located in the Waterford area, all under the umbrella. And a man by the name of Eamon McEnany is the man that looks after all of the museums. And he joins me on the line. But I am also joined by David Bowles and Coleman Curran. David and Coleman were the two men that put this timepiece museum together. I'm going to talk to them very shortly. But first, I want to talk to Eamon about the treasures, the Waterford treasures. Eamon, welcome to the programme and thank you for joining me.
Good evening, Gerard. Thank you for having me on your programme.
Not at all. Delighted to. You've been a busy man. You've been very busy in Waterford putting this huge project, and it is a huge project because you've a number of museums under the one umbrella.
That's right, Gerry. Yeah, Waterford is Ireland's oldest city, and in an area called the Viking Triangle, that's the part of the city that was established by the Vikings. We have developed a number of museums. For example, we have a Viking museum in Reginald's Tower, which is called after the Viking founder of the city in 914. Next to that, we have an interactive kind of 3D interactive called The King of the Vikings. It's set in a reconstructed Viking house, and we do it with Oculus Rift, so you're really immersed into the Viking experience. Then just up the road from that, everything is on within 2 or 3 minutes walk of each other. Wow. We've got a medieval museum and two of the great treasures of Ireland. A couple of years ago, they decided they'd list the 100 great treasures of Ireland. We've got two of them, the wonderful medieval vestments and the great charter rule, which Queen Elizabeth saw on her visit to Ireland and where Prince Charles, now King Charles, saw earlier on this year. Beside that, we've got a silver museum. Then we've got a museum of the Bishop's Palace, which takes Irish history from 1700s up to the modern period. And the silver museum does the same. It takes Irish silver from the Viking period up to modern times. And then we have, of course, what we're all talking about this week, the Irish Museum of Time, Ireland's National Horological Museum, for which we were nominated, the only museum in Ireland nominated for the Guild of British Travel Writers Award. There are 5 British museums nominated, and the one here in Waterford, the Irish Museum of Time, is the only museum to be nominated for that, the only Irish museum to be nominated for the award.
Now, when I was going to school in black and white, we were taught about the Vikings coming to Ireland and they created havoc. They weren't very nice when they came and they weren't really invited in the first place. Sure, they weren't.
It's true.
But you're very proud of the Viking heritage in the southeast, and probably rightly so. And I mean, they laid the foundations for so much in this country, didn't they?
Well, all the earliest cities, Waterford first, Dublin, Cork and Limerick, and lots of towns like Arklow and Wicklow and Carlingford and places like that, they're all Viking names. Mm. You know, we didn't have towns, unlike other parts, like what we now call England. Mm. The Romans went there, so they had cities before Ireland, but we didn't have cities. The centres of population would have been around the monasteries, but their aim wasn't commercial like cities. And the Vikings founded our first cities. And ironically, the Vikings who came here weren't city dwellers themselves back in Norway. When the Vikings came, of course, they came basically as raiders, and then they eventually went into trading because the raiding wasn't proven that good for them, because the native Irish actually were well able for them. And so they became merchants, and by becoming merchants and settling on rivers, that they founded our first cities such as Waterford, Dublin, Cork, Limerick, and other smaller towns of Arklow and Wicklow and Carlingford and places like that. So there's a great Viking heritage here. Unlike England, we didn't have any Romans coming to Ireland, so we had no cities here until the Vikings arrived. So we owe them a lot.
Now, what you have there in Waterford, was it something that was designed that you would have a number of different museums within walking distance of each other? Or did you start with one and another one happened along and so on? How did it come about?
No, it was planned as far back as 2007. Then, unfortunately, as everyone knows, we had a big recession. Well, Europe and America had a recession after the collapse of the economy in 2008. We still went back to the idea, and we developed it a bit slower than we had intended. Mm. But we developed the Viking Museum, the Medieval Museum, and the Bishop's Palace to tell the story of the history of the city. And then, fortunately, I met with Coleman Corn, whom you'll be speaking to later, and David Bowles, and they came up with the idea of the museum, the Horological Museum in Waterford, which was their expertise put together. Of course, without the collection, there'd be no museum. We just provided the building. So it was a fortuitous coming together of Coleman and David and Waterford Council, represented by myself.
All right, let's talk to the two gentlemen that we've just mentioned. And David, I'll start with you, if I can, please. I note that the museum opened in 2021. It was middle of the year, it was June or thereabouts. And you are considered one of the eminent, preeminent horologists in the country. What got you interested in clocks and watches and fabulous things like that?
Well, my father had a small collection of interesting old clocks and a few pocket watches when I was growing up. When I was about 12 or 13, I had a cuckoo clock in my bedroom, and he had a few good clocks around the house. And I became interested in them, and then discovered I could pick up old pocket watches, very old ones, 200 years old, for very small money, scrap value. And then I began to realise that clocks were also very interesting. And I began to study Irish clocks. And at times, other people were very sceptical. They said, but your Irish clocks, they're all made in England. They never made them in Ireland. And I discovered that was utter rubbish. Irish clocks in the 1700s and 1800s were entirely made in Ireland. Every piece of them was made in Ireland, their movements, their cases. I also discovered the pocket watches. Many of them are made in Dublin from gold that was mined in Wicklow and silver that was also mined in Wicklow for their cases. And there was a huge enterprise made by John Dunnigan, who made about 23,000 pocket watches, all superb in gold and silver cases. And I began to collect these and in a small way. And I gradually realised I could pick up wonderful examples because nobody else was interested. So I was lucky. I've been doing it for 60 years and I just got in before other people and could pick up the best pieces that came on the market.
I'm holding up a pocket watch. Can you see it?
I can indeed.
That was...
It's an open face watch, meaning that It doesn't have a cover over the dial, so You can just take it out of your pocket and read the time. The ones with the cover are called hunter cases. They can be more dramatic because you can make sort of a show in front of your friends of taking the watch out and opening the cover and reading the time.
Yeah.
So just one-upmanship, perhaps.
I have one of those, the ones that you can open the cover, but the one in my hand is one that my mother gave to me, and her mother gave this to my grandfather in 1931 when they got engaged. And it doesn't work anymore, unfortunately, but it's a beautiful piece to have. And it's one that I treasure. So I can understand how you'd enjoy looking at them and just, you know, being there. David, thank you for that. Coleman, if I can talk to you, you're Dublin based. And I presume your love of timepieces started pretty much the same as David's did and other horologists that I've heard talking. It's from your youth, Coleman, was it?
Yes. Good evening, Gerard. Good evening, your listeners.
Thanks.
I started collecting clocks again about 30 or 40 years ago. And my interest was, I suppose, the history of the makers and the history of the immigrants who came to Ireland and were involved in the industry, people like Huguenots, German immigrants, and so on. So I was studying it from a social history point of view. Also, I was interested in the development of the engineering of the clocks from 1700 through to 1900. And I was interested in the development of the cabinet making of the clocks, grandfather clocks in particular. And there are interesting regional styles. For instance, a clock from Belfast is built completely differently to a clock from Dublin. And indeed, a clock from Cork or Waterford will have distinctive regional styles. So I was interested in the progressions of the engineering, the progressions of the cabinet making, and the social history of the the men and sometimes women who were involved in making them. So that's kind of what drew me to it. I study a good bit of history, so the history of it is interesting.
The Museum of Time in Waterford, is that the only museum of its kind in Ireland?
Yes, it's the only museum of its kind in Ireland, and it is the biggest and best and finest collection of Irish clocks and watches in the world. It's got a great international section, but its strength is its Irish collection. So it's the biggest and the best.
All right. Again, Coleman, I'll stay with you because you can't see me. I know that. Whose idea was it? Was it yourself or was it David? Or was it over a pint you were having a chat or over a clock that you were having a chat and came up with the notion that you might like to do this?
Well, I think we probably both came up with the idea separately. I think David thought about this idea in the past, maybe 20 years ago. I retired from a day job in 2013 and I said, I'm going to set up a museum for this collection of clocks I have, because if I don't, what happens to people like me is when you die, there's a big auction and everything gets scattered mm-hmm. to the four corners of the earth again. Mm-hmm. And the work that you've done over 30 or 40 years assembling a collection dissipates. So I said, I'm going to set up a museum. I thought it would take me about 2 years. It took about 8.5 or 10 years. And then I met Eamon McEnany in 2015. We started the project. And then David, who had had similar ideas in the past, joined us. And the museum today is an amalgam of the endeavors of the three of us. David, his collection, my collection, and then Eamon McEnany contributed greatly with the council's support and, of course, the building.
And I'll go back to David if I can on this. David, why was Waterford chosen as the location for it?
Well, as Coleman said, I came up with a love of a museum in Dublin 30 years ago and realised it wasn't going to happen. There seemed to be no interest. Coleman, luckily, had connections with Waterford, met Eamon, and through Eamon started the idea. And then I joined in, and when I saw the building that they had picked, I saw the enthusiasm and energy of Eamon, and the whole concept suddenly seemed wonderful. It was a perfect size building, and the whole arrangement of the display is very, very interesting. It's designed to appeal not just to people who are interested in clocks, but to whole families, husbands, wives, and children. There's something there for everybody, but as Coleman has said, mainly Irish clocks and watches. By far the finest collection in the world. It'll never be surpassed. So it's ended up in a wonderful place, Waterford.
And when I go there, which I intend fully to do, but it'll be 2023 when I get there, I can see a couple of pictures online. So you see the lovely tall grandfather clocks, you see time, all sorts of timepieces. But do you get to see how clocks work and how watches work?
Very much so. I've been in maybe 50 clock museums all over the world, and I would consider ours one of the best in that you see the actual mechanisms, you see them on revolving stands, so you can see every part of them. You see them partly dismantled, you see them on revolving stands. So it's a wonderful display for learning how clocks and watches work. There's a wonderful section about the whole of Ireland where there are 35 different towns and cities in Ireland. And no matter which town you come from, you'll find a watch on display or a movement which comes from somewhere near to where you live.
Mm. Eamon, a lot of museums across the country would have children's tours, school tours, and would have a lot of students going through them because it's important that they learn the history and so on. Are children or young people fascinated with the timepieces?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I have to confess that I didn't know anything about clocks and watches until I met David and Coleman. So it was kind of thrown in at the deep end. And again, I have to, apart from their supreme generosity, I mean, this is a masterclass in generosity. They handed over all their collections to the museum and also helped with setting physically to set up the museum. They came down every week to help set it up because, you know, I wouldn't know how to do that or my staff would know how to do that. And they've been extremely generous also in financially resourcing the museum. So I just want that for the record. But we're actually just about to introduce now a little guided tour for children, and that they have to then answer questions and they get a prize at the end. Because sometimes when you go with family, you want to be reading the captions and the kids want to be doing something else. So it's a way of engaging with the children. But like the young people really enjoy the fact that there's lots of interactivity in the museum. You know, you can press buttons and as David said there, you can look up any town in Ireland, see where they're making clocks, watches there, and you can read a story about the town and the person, the man, and usually it was always men, I'm afraid, in those days, who made the watch or whatever. So it is very interactive. There's also some music boxes there, which are made in Switzerland and principally, you know, it's the same sort of mindset. You know, those wind up really intricate music boxes that to me are quite mind boggling how they work at all. And they're there, and you can obviously, we don't let everybody wind them up because they'd soon be damaged. But you can press a computer and it'll show you the thing working, and you'll hear the music from it. So there's a lot to see in that sense. And to my surprise, as a museum curator, it's now the busiest museum in the city.
Wow.
Which, yeah, I mean, I know some cynics were saying to me, who's going to come and visit a museum with clocks and watches? Well, the very opposite has happened. Our numbers last year went way over what we ever expected. This year we'll have over 100,000 visitors, which is twice the population of the city of Waterford. I mean, you know, and that's the way you have to compare museum visitors. And this is paying visitors. We're in the few museums in Ireland that charge, because unfortunately Waterford is a small council. And we have 30 staff between all the museums, so we do charge. We do get a very generous grant from the council. But that is the busiest museum of all the museums, which is quite remarkable, you know, given that we have things in the Medieval Museum that both the Queen of England and the King, present King of England, came to see. And the other museums, somebody might say they're much more general. But for some reason, people have a fascination with timekeeping. Of course, when you think of it, it dictates all our lives. It dictates modern science and modern technology. Without very accurate timekeeping, no, what we call the scientific revolution would never have happened.
That's true.
Modern industrialization would never have happened.
When you look at the workings of a watch or a clock, you may as well be looking into a computer from the 1700s, yeah. Isn't you? Absolutely.
They were, yeah. And I think what we show in the exhibition is as well that, you know, we have places like Ballymena, the small towns still even today, and yet some of the greatest clock or watchmakers in the country came from small places. It's just like you could have somebody out on the Aran Islands being a computer genius, and he can still, or she can still, operate on a worldwide scale. Well, these people were the same. They were making clocks and watches as good as you'll find anywhere in the world in small little towns and villages in Ireland back 200 years ago. So I think that's an important lesson for today as well. You know, it's not all about living in big cities and all the rest of it.
That's it. And I'm going to go back to you here. I'm going to cast my mind back, I don't know how many years, maybe 5, maybe 6 years. A little fella on the Late Late Toy Show told, I think it was Ryan Tubridy, that he wanted to be a horologist when he grew up. And very few people watching and very few people in the audience knew what a horologist was until he explained that it was a person that makes watches. And suddenly it became part of the conversation in Ireland. Are there many horologists or budding horologists in Ireland today?
Well, we had ongoing over the years a small group in Dublin and in Northern Ireland of about maybe 30 or 40 members in the Republic and a similar amount in Northern Ireland. Though the numbers have dropped in recent years. But the very little chap you mentioned, who was talked about wanting to be a horologist, visited the museum recently, and I'm told he was overcome with excitement. Wow. and had to come back a second time, and was overwhelmed. He couldn't praise it more highly, which was great praise from him. One or two things I would mention. The museum is very much for the entire island of Ireland. It covers Northern Ireland and the Republic. And the clocks go right back. The earliest clock would be about 1550, not Irish, it would be German. But for Irish clocks, they date from 1680 onwards, which is astonishing to think that you can have a clock that's 300 years old and it's still going perfectly. And as regards your pocket watch you mentioned, any clock or watch, if it's reasonably complete, can be got going. They were designed to keep going and they can be restored. It does cost money, but it can be done.
I shall go further afield and I shall investigate that very same thing. Thank you. I'd love to get it ticking again. I really would. Coleman, your collection, no more than David's collection, when you walk among it, how do you feel? What does it make you feel like?
Well, I'm delighted about the museum and I'm delighted that our collaboration has achieved such a wonderful display. Going back to what I said earlier, when you spend 30 or 40 years studying clocks and collecting them and watches, you assemble a knowledge of the makers, the engineering, and the history. unfortunately, when people like us pass away, that knowledge gets dissipated. Mm-hmm. This museum has captured the knowledge and captured the important collection of 200 years plus of Irish horology. And that's what I'm thrilled about. David's right and Eamon's right. The display is wonderful and the layout is great and it's child-friendly and all that. But it has captured the history and it has captured the integrity of the makers and so on. And that's what I'm thrilled about because it's all there and hopefully it'll stay there and it will be augmented as time goes by. So I'm very proud of that. We've achieved something marvellous between us.
I'm almost done. And thank you both. Thank you all, the three of you, for your time today. And I've gone on a little bit longer than I intended to. But Eamon, now that you've got this up and running and you've got other things under your bonnet, is there anything in the planning that we should know about in relation to the museums in Waterford?
Well, when we started the Museum of Time, we brought this brochure that David and Coleman will remember. And one half was for the Museum of Time because we were trying to raise funds and get people interested in the whole concept. And then the other one was for an old building very close, within a few yards of that building. It's an old the remains of a medieval building. And we were saying the second museum is when time runs out. In other words, it's the Museum of the Irish Wake. Okay, but that's the way we originally branded it. So it's the Museum of Time and the Museum of When Time Runs Out. Okay. And it was an old almshouse set up, curiously enough, on the 2nd of November, as a lot of your listeners will know, is called All Souls Day. Mm-hmm. And it was deliberately established on All Souls Day. We've got good records of it here in Waterford, great medieval records here in Waterford. And it was set up in 1478. And we know a lot about the two men who set it up. And the poor misfortunates, it was basically a God's waiting room for elderly people that couldn't, you know, there was no social welfare in those days. So it was basically an old folks home, what we call nowadays senior citizens home. And they had to pray three times in the night. They had to get up to pray for the souls of the dead. And we're going to look at how death was marked in Ireland since the beginning of time up. And then we'll have six rooms dealing with the middle different centuries from the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th and 20th century. And we'll have an Irish wake room in the whole thing.
Okay, okay.
So that's what we're working on at the moment. So when time runs out.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And time is running out for me now. I'll be retired when that opens.
But I'm sure you'll get an invitation to the opening.
Minute it opens, I'm going to retire.
Well done. All right. No. David or Coleman, whichever one of you wants to answer this, can one buy a new grandfather clock or a new clock in this day and age?
I'll leave that to Coleman because he would know more.
The answer is yes. There are lots of modern clocks being made and sold. But sadly, the quality won't be as good as anything made before 1900. All of the clocks and watches that were made before 1900 were built to be repaired and to last possibly for a generation, two generations, three generations. Most of the clocks built after 1900 and indeed in the present century are built to run and then perhaps pass away, and then you replace them with something else. So sadly, the old traditions of the craftsmanship of the cases and the craftsmanship of the mechanisms isn't there. They're mass-produced, they're factory-produced, and they're engineered very highly so that the built-in obsolescence, I'm afraid, is the phrase to be used.
No worries. Whose clocks are going off, or is it everybody's
the
clocks?
The old ones are better.
All right. Whose clocks
are... Sorry, that's in my... I apologise for that.
Oh, not at all. We're talking about clocks, so it's lovely. Listen, I've got to leave it there, gentlemen. We're talking about the Irish Museum of Time in Waterford, all part of a number of different museums there. The Waterford Treasures. If you want to take a look at what's available, watervertreasures.com is the website. And Eamon McEnany is the curator of those. Eamon, thanks a million for talking
to me.
Thank
you, Chair.
And I wish you well and continued
good
success and a great retirement as well. And
thank you.
David Bowles and Coleman Curran, the driving forces behind the Museum of Time. Thank you both for taking time out to talk to us today on the programme.
Thank you, Ger.